Are you ready for what I'm about to do to you? A Person of Interest fic, written and read by Iteration. Part 1. The thing is, Finch hadn't expected Reese to be a superhero. What he'd expected was for Reese to have a fail rate similar to that of other ex-CIA agents. He'd found enough ex-agents to have an acceptable statistical sample from which to infer a fail rate. Well, not that the government kept statistics on their ex-employees, but finding and interpreting data is what Finch does. He's known what he was getting into when he found Reese. He'd known how good he could expect him to be at his job, and he'd known the odds on Reese dominating situations of physical violence. So when Reese turned out to have a comic book-like ability to best anyone in a fight, Finch was, well, at first, he congratulated himself on having chosen an excellent asset. And he congratulated himself on the excellent job he was obviously doing assisting Reese. But soon enough, it became obvious that Reese was truly unusually good at his job. He rarely needed assistance in the field, and when he did, it wasn't unexpected. It was because he sacrificed himself on purpose. Furthermore, he was bewilderingly confident about his physical abilities. He could disarm opponents so quickly and be so menacing in the process that any opponent ceded to his authority. Reese even cowed a U.S. Marshal in the middle of a U.S. Marshal office. That was when Finch first realized that Reese's abilities provoked a truly inconvenient response in him. And when Root captured Finch and Reese came for him, saved him, Finch felt something overwhelming, something that took hold of him and was never going to let go. Finch tries not to think about it. He's been attracted to colleagues before. He made a really awkward pass at Nathan once. Nathan had not been expecting it, and he'd been confused and, well, probably hadn't meant to make Harold feel humiliated afterwards. They'd never spoken about it again, but Harold had never been able to shake off the feeling that part of Nathan was laughing at him. And now Reese stands too close to Finch sometimes, and Finch feels like all he can see is Reese's overwhelming, terrifying competence and his efficient muscle mass and his calculated monotone voice, and he would be able to think straight if Reese would put enough distance between them, but right now Finch is close enough to smell his soap and can't find the words to make Reese step away. Finch doesn't know how other people handle workplace relationships, but it's not like they can sign up for a sexual harassment workshop, and maybe sometimes Reese seems to expect Finch to speak out about it, but it's easier for Finch to just let Reese invade his space. "What's wrong, Finch? Cat got your tongue?" Reese asks, gentle. Finch realizes that he's been silent for nearly half a minute. "My apologies, Mr. Reese. Directions to the Andrews residence are here. Please keep me apprised of all further developments," he says, and he turns awkwardly to see Reese looking down at him. Finch breathes out, slowly. Reese licks his bottom lip. "Thank you, Harold." Reese exits and, well, the mission is then completely civilized, and it sorts itself out with a little discussion and paperwork. But Finch is horrified to realize that he's disappointed. He's disappointed even on the next four jobs. They're all solved with very minimal groundwork. There are four whole jobs for which Reese doesn't even need to break a sweat. Finch doesn't know what's happening, but a week later, he finds himself with a choice between quietly finding the location of their target. It would take a few hours with a computer, no more. A choice between that and letting Reese put the fear of God into a group of ex-Blackwater mercenaries. A pleonasm, surely, but how else would you describe a group of people who don't care what side they're on? Finch finds himself biting back a reply when Reese says, "Maybe I should go pay them a visit." Finch doesn't condone senseless violence. He doesn't. But he's just had a vision of Reese being stronger, faster, smarter than everybody else in the room, and he knows that it would be simpler and less messy to just find the location without violence. And he knows he would just have to say, but he holds his tongue. That's how it starts. Part 2. The thing is, Reese hadn't expected Finch to be good at his job. A bored rich guy. A bored rich guy. A cripple, a self-described cripple who needed Reese to do his dirty work. Finch couldn't do field work, so he bought himself Reese to do it for him. Because Reese knew a little bit about the violence part of clandestine operations. Reese had been so sure that the wealthy Mr. Finch was just in it for the vicarious thrills. And it was fine. Reese had been willing to indulge him. He figured Finch would find out soon enough that clandestine missions and black ops, the real, live kind, weren't any fun. So the shock of finding that Finch was the best operative he'd ever met had completely overwhelmed Reese. Finch wasn't just knowledgeable, resourceful, and efficient. He somehow knew just what Reese needed to know, and sometimes just what he needed to hear. Once, Reese had been conducting surveillance, on his own, while Finch did some research in the library. And conducting surveillance was pretty monotonous all by himself. But just as Reese's energy had been faltering, he'd heard Finch's voice in his ear. "Mr. Reese," he'd asked, "do you believe in luck?" Bewildered, Reese had answered, "No, Finch, I don't." "Ah, glad to hear it. I suppose the concept of luck is soothing to some people, but skills, patience, and diligence are so much more reliable." And somehow, that had just been exactly the right thing to say. Having Finch's voice in his ear during missions was the most amazing thing that had ever happened to Reese. Finch's diminutive, unremarkable appearance had been another odd thing. The first time he'd seen him, Reese had cataloged Finch's glasses, his limp, his clothes, and then he hadn't given them another thought until one day Reese was shot and Finch came to rescue him in the parking garage. "Let me help you, John," Finch had said, and he'd maneuvered him towards the car, and so Reese had let Finch carry some of his weight, just a little of it. And all of a sudden, Reese had felt Finch's hands and how careful they were, and his arms holding him, and he thought that he would like to rest his head on Finch's shoulder. "You know, Finch," John had said then, "sometimes it's almost like you know what you're doing." Finch had laughed, and John had felt the vibrations against his chest. And after that, Reese had found himself leaning in towards Finch sometimes, just a bit, and looking at him. And he found himself wondering what Finch wore when he was alone, and whether his clothes were, you know, clothes he really liked, or were they just kind of part of his persona, like his clothes were the cover story Finch gave himself. Because Reese had figured out at some point that Harold Finch wasn't just an assumed name, it was an assumed identity. And now, well, he doesn't know if Finch knows, but he keeps a kind of virtual catalog of things that don't quite fit, and the things that are probably counterfeit, like Finch's glasses. Reese is like 70% sure he doesn't need them. Or Finch's like supernatural ability to keep Reese from finding out where he lives, which, okay, Reese doesn't dwell on it too much, but holy cow, is that ever out of character? Finch can manipulate computers, data, and virtual information fine, but that does not fit in with the ability to lose a tail every single time. Reese has tried to tail Finch all the way to his home dozens of times now, and he still has never seen it. Like, who is this guy? Wait a minute, why has he been silent for nearly half a minute? Reese decides to ask. "What's wrong, Finch? Cat got your tongue?" Later, when Reese leaves the library, Finch seems genuinely distracted, and Reese feels something. All Reese knows is, ever since the parking garage, he's become aware of Finch in a way that he wasn't before. He thinks about his hands and the way Finch's eyes flick up towards him sometimes. And why did Harold Finch choose tweed and glasses? Like, what's he hiding? Would he look good in a sweater? He's not likely to know anytime soon. The way their current job is going, he could practically solve this without ever interacting with the victim, which would be easier, come to think of it. She is a young, talkative barista who favors a low-cut neckline and tends to lean over the counter a lot. Reese itches to tell her to cover it up, but, you know, in the field, it's better to just play the game. Finch, though, seems to disagree. I'm getting information, Finch. You're flirting. That's a way to get information. Miss Rostenkowski would tell you everything you needed to know, whether you wanted to or not. Flirting is pointless here, Mr. Reese. My entire presence here is useless, Finch. I'm good at violence, not talking. I cede the point, Mr. Reese. And the next four jobs are also very quiet. There's no shooting, no running, no punching. It's kind of nice at first, but Reese is starting to get, like, stir-crazy, which is how he ends up practically running out the door to beat some information out of a group of professional mercenaries when he knows Finch could probably find everything they needed to know without breaking a sweat. That's how it starts. Part 3. Mercenary number 3 is the first one to snap. She's in Williamsburg, the stupid oyster bar, the Maison Premier. They have her in the basement. Finch types it in carefully. On the other end of the line, Reese is only slightly out of breath. Hey, Finch, did you get that?
I did, Mr. Reese. Detective Carter is being notified as we speak.
So Reese went to the hangar and, as expected, gave the mercenaries something that had been lacking in their lives for far too long. Fear. And Finch watched. And watched. And Reese reported back and asked Finch what to do, as though despite already being the best at what he does, Reese still wants Finch's input. And he wants Finch to tell him what to do and where to do it, and Reese will just be docile. Be a terrifying, brutal human weapon who obeys Finch. And suddenly Finch wants. Reese is competent and damaged, and his eyes light up when he sees Finch, and Finch wants him. It takes a full minute before the flashbacks hit. The flashbacks of the times he watched Nathan and Nathan caught him. He still feels the embarrassment and the loneliness as though it were yesterday. How bothersome. Reese returns soon enough, and he seems flushed and full of energy, and he rolls around on the floor with Bear, like almost like giddy, until Finch clears his throat and suggests that Bear might enjoy a walk. And might you enjoy a walk, Harold? Reese asks, impertinent.
I might, Mr. Reese.
And out of absolutely nowhere, Reese abruptly asks,
Will you ever tell me your real name, Harold? And he's still on the floor scratching Bear's ears.
And Finch hears himself answer,
You know several of my real names, John.
And Reese looks up at him with a look that seems to say, I know you're not dumb. Why are you like this? And Finch looks away. He's suddenly angry. He's angry about Nathan all over again. Angry that Nathan had looked at him the way he did until Finch had come to care for him. While Nathan had leaned into him and talked to him in that low, confidential voice just to him, just to Harold. Like Nathan and Harold were in their own little world together and no one else mattered. And he only did that when he needed Harold to do something for him. And then he went off and got himself killed. And for what? To prove that he cared about people? But he didn't. He only cared about how people could make him feel. And that's the first time Finch sees it in Reese's eyes. Like an odd, conflicted glance. Just in passing. Nearly imperceptible. Finch just can't do this. He doesn't know why Reese is looking up at him right now. And he doesn't know what Reese wants Finch to do for him. And he prefers to eschew curiosity for now. On second thought, Mr. Reese, perhaps you'll walk Bear without me. I have some work to do. Part 4. It happens 3 more times. 3 little tiny crossroads,
where Reese might have held back and let Finch do the work with computers and harmless paperwork, but instead he went ahead and did the work with his fists. It's all fine until today, when Reese spontaneously accepts their target's offer of a drink. Except the glass contains whiskey and aconite, and Reese swallows about half of it before Finch's warning comes through. He has about 20 minutes to make up to the hospital before the first symptoms appear. So 20 minutes in which he has to avoid their target's hired muscle. Their target's small army of hired muscle. Finch's voice is eerily calm. "Door to your right. Go." Reese hurdles himself at the door and takes off running. Two floors down, as quickly as you can, Reese hears people in the stairwell above him, and his heart surges a bit. He loves the chase. "You should be at level 3 now. Open the trapdoor to your right." Reese doesn't even think about it. He opens the door, and Finch says, "There should be a disused elevator. Use the ladder built into the wall, and tell me when you hit the floor." Reese climbs down the ladder. He feels exhilarated. Finch is so good at this. How did Finch even know? "On your left, pull the lever near the door." The door opens onto a parking garage. "Convenient," said Reese, just as a guard comes up behind him. Reese, driven by momentum, knocks him out without even looking in his direction. Finch makes an odd noise in his ear. They don't speak again until much later. Reese hot-wired a motorcycle and went to the hospital and back, and he's fine, and he's jubilant, actually. The case ends with zero deaths and a chase scene straight out of James Bond. It is the perfect day. But when he walks back to the library, Finch hardly acknowledges him. "What's wrong, Finch?" Reese drawls. "New number?" "No, Mr. Reese." Finch's tone is unreadable. "What is it, Finch? You're saying that like there's something wrong." Finch shifts in his chair. "I simply wish it were possible to achieve things without violence." "Well, Finch, if it were possible to achieve things without violence, you wouldn't need me, would you?" Finch stares at the desk. Reese walks up to him and leans. "Finch?" A moment passes. "Finch?" Reese repeats, voice soft. "That wasn't a joke. I don't think..." Reese places a hand on his shoulder. "Harold?" Abruptly, Finch grabs Reese's forearm, pushes Reese's hand away. Reese is shocked. He doesn't move. And he watches as Finch stands and, still gripping Reese's arm, twists it. Reese resists at first. Of course he does. He has no idea what's going on. But then, without knowing why, he turns pliant and Finch pins him between the desk and himself. Finch finally looks up into Reese's eyes. "What were you thinking?" he asks. Reese is disconcerted and he says, "Your eyes are blue." Finch grabs Reese's shirt. He holds it in his fists and pulls. "You don't just drink anything people give you. How could you do that? How could you possibly do that?" Finch's strength is surprising. Reese sways down towards him. This is what he wanted. He didn't even know. Finch steps away. He turns around, heads towards the door, and leaves. Part 5. Finch's control really snaps the next time he sees Reese. He doesn't plan it. He doesn't know it's going to happen. Reese has come back from the veterinarian. Bear is spending the night there. And they've been alone in the library in a sort of heavy, stifling silence all afternoon. Reese breaks the silence. "It's the fighting, isn't it?" "I beg your pardon?" "That's why you hired me, isn't it? Violence, it's unseemly to you, isn't it? That's why you needed somebody else to do it for you. You didn't want to carry the ethical burden of what we do." Reese apparently thinks that he has been the one choosing violence all this time, when really Finch has been letting him, manipulating him, really, into fighting. And Reese somehow has concluded that Finch's outburst was due to a distaste for physical violence in general, rather than a distaste for Reese getting hurt. And it's such a ridiculous idea, such a an ironically wrong interpretation of events that it would be comical if it wasn't for the fact that now Finch will have to either explain away the confusion or risk Reese asking more unanswerable questions, and then things between them will have to change. All that Finch can see, all that goes through his mind, is a parade of past relationships, glances, and touches, and broken trust, and Finch suddenly finds himself to be inexplicably, blindingly angry. "I beg your pardon, Mr. Reese?" Reese's voice rises. "It's the only thing that makes sense, Finch. You have me do all the fighting, but you can barely look me in the eye afterwards." Finch cannot bear to look in Reese's direction. "Surely you cannot believe that I'm as sanctimonious and prudish as that," he says, derisive. "What should I believe, Finch? That you're comfortable with the use of force and brutality? Because I'm not seeing any evidence of that." Reese moves towards Finch, near the spot where Finch grabbed him the day before. "Look at me. Look at me, Finch, look at me." Reese is probably about to say that Finch should be the one to rough up a perp in interrogation one of these days, and that maybe he'd understand how difficult it is, and how it's not so simple as right versus wrong. But Finch suddenly feels as though he's become someone else, and before Reese can say anything, Finch pulls himself up to his full height and slaps Reese backhanded, his knuckles painfully hitting Reese's cheekbone. "You idiot," Finch says, his voice quickly rising. "Of course I have you do all the fighting. You are a statistical freak who never loses a fight. Ergo, of the two of us, you are the fighter. I don't find violence unseemly. What I find unseemly is the irresponsible stupidity that nearly gets you killed. You...
Reese hasn't moved for several seconds, his eyes shut tight, and his hands gripping the side of the desk. Finch is holding back a yell of pain. What on earth has he just done? And he's barely refraining from cradling his knuckles in his other hand. He looks at Reese. Reese opens his eyes. Reese's eyes are glazed over, and his breathing is becoming labored, ragged. And Finch, guided by an instinct he didn't know he had, grips Reese's hair and pulls. Reese lets out a guttural sound, his eyes flutter closed, and, pulled down by Finch, he stumbles to his knees. Finch feels as though something he was clutching tight has just fallen out and come free from his grasp. Reese would let him do anything he wanted, and he takes Reese's chin in his hand, grips it. Reese's eyes, barely focused, move up, sliding over the whole length of Finch's body. "Harder," he says. Finch's hand tightens on Reese's chin, gripping it hard, hurting. Reese gasps, and Finch needs to know. "Are you ready?" Reese lets out another guttural sound. "Are you ready?" Finch repeats. "For what I'm about to do to you?" Reese whispers, "Yes." Finch swipes his thumb up the side of Reese's face and runs it over his mouth. Reese lets his mouth loll open, and Finch thrusts his thumb into it, gripping Reese's jaw. He pulls Reese by his jaw towards the chair. Finch sits down in the chair, Reese kneeling in front of him. Finch lets go of his jaw. "You wanted this. You've wanted me to see you like this. How much you like it. You'll do anything I tell you, won't you, John?" Reese nods. "Then show me. Show me what you want." And Reese reaches out, pulls at Finch's fly until he gets his trousers open, rubs his face into Finch's lap, and swallows Finch down. The sounds he makes are obscene, and Finch closes his eyes, lost. His hands are on Reese's head and neck, and he feels the hard thump of Reese's heart, hears the yearning, helpless noises coming from him, and it's enough to drown out his thoughts. Finch can feel his movements become more erratic. Reese's hands clutch at him, but he wants... "Stop," he whispers, prying Reese off himself. "Stand up." They stand together, oddly, awkwardly, and Finch reaches up blindly to cup Reese's face. Finch has everything to lose. His anger has disappeared, but he can feel
and he can smell Reese, and he won't be able to bear it if... He won't be able to bear it if Reese doesn't love him back. He won't. He'll... Reese leans down, and their lips touch. Finch scrabbles to pull his trousers open, and he tries to move forward to grind their cocks together, and he's desperate for it, as though the contact of his skin will tell Reese everything Finch needs him to know. And Reese, following his lead, he reaches down to take both their erections in his hand, pushing them against each other and stroking them until they both start shuddering. Reese's stubble scrapes at Finch's skin, and he moans, "Oh my God," into Finch's mouth, and they come all over each other. Reese's skin is hot, and Finch runs a hand up his hip, the faint scars there. "Mr. Reese? John. John?" Finch whispers. "My name is... The End."